Hi, welcome back to the Incidental Economist podcast. Once again, this is Aaron Carroll and Austin Fracht. Today's date is August 12th, 2011. This week on the blog, we've had a number of posts on quality, specifically the quality of the U.S. healthcare system, which always seems to spark some debate. So Austin and I thought it'd be a good idea to talk about it a bit here.
Yeah, people, I'm amazed how much people want to weigh in and talk about healthcare quality. Aaron, you'll put up a post about it with a graph or two, and the number of comments are amazing. I can't keep up with it. And so it is something I think that is worth talking about. So, Aaron, right, we spend a tremendous amount of money in this country on healthcare, something like at least twice as much as any other nation. So we must have the best healthcare quality, right? It must be number one. Am I right?
No.
No. What?
And it's just so hard to imagine, but it you know, and we've done so many posts on this in the blog, and people will try so hard to find a way to make us look awesome. They will bend over backwards, they will twist the statistics, they will do whatever they possibly can to try to make us look number one. But it almost doesn't matter how you slice it. When you look really well and in detail at multiple countries over multiple years and comparing us fairly to other comparable nations, we almost always do middling at best to sometimes, you know, in the bottom. And it's hard to imagine, given how much we spend and how much we hear. But while we have some of the finest doctors, some of the finest hospitals, some of the most advanced technology, our system just isn't so good. I mean, our quality just isn't even close to number one.
Do you think that's true for everybody? Are we seeing in the various measures you've put up on the blog, are we seeing, you know, an average low level of quality, but it's actually very high for some people and very low for others?
Well, I do think that there is something to that. I think that part of our problem is that we're brought down by systemic faults, by the fact that significant portions of the United States don't have insurance and therefore don't have access to real important parts of the healthcare system. And I think also, again, there are people even with insurance but who are underinsured or who don't have enough knowledge about the healthcare system to actually access it in a good way. So there is some truth to the idea that if we improved access, not even just insurance access, but just access, that we could probably do a good job of improving quality. But people often think that it's just money, that if you just, you know, rich people will do better than poor people. And on the whole, that's true. But I got to tell you, my experience, and this is anecdotal, is that how much quality you get of the healthcare system is almost entirely related to just, do you know someone who can steer you through it? I find that in general, if you are good friends with a doctor, if you know someone in the healthcare system, you're going to get much better care than you would otherwise, significantly better care. And I think that that access is almost more important than anything else. But part of that is because our healthcare system is so complex. It's so difficult to navigate. And there just are so many problems that are built into it.
Well, you know, that makes sense to me, Aaron. You know that on a couple of occasions, I've actually called or texted you to ask questions about what's going on with one of my children, because you're a pediatrician. And not everybody has access to, you know, almost a 24/7 pediatrician on call. But it's tremendously valuable. In fact, I think I put this on the blog when it happened. It did save a trip to the ER. So it saved a lot of money, actually, in that instance, just getting you on the phone or by text in the middle of the night. I'm sure you don't want everybody doing that.
No, but I think you bring up an important point in that that's almost the kind of quality that would make a real difference. And it's incredibly hard to do because on a large scale, it would be expensive. You know, having someone available on calls almost 24/7 is not something that a doctor wants to do. And I can say personally, I'm willing to do that for my close friends, and I do, and I think it benefits them enormously. I also do it for family. I'm sure other doctors do the same. I think that there's concierge service that pops up across the United States where doctors for extra money are also willing to make themselves more available. And we could talk about this all day, but it turns out that those kind of, you know, small, simple fixes probably go a long way to improving quality, much more so than some of the incredibly expensive technological stuff that we demand and that we do. But in the United States, that's what we're fixated on. We're obsessed with, you know, getting these tests and getting things done, as opposed sometimes to recognizing that it would be the small, simple fixes, like the ability to call a doctor on the phone or talk to somebody with knowledge immediately. Or I got to tell you, even house calls. I will do that for ear infections for friends who live close by. It saves enormous amounts of time and headache and money and results in enormously high satisfaction. But we've gotten away from that in our system, and we've focused much more on specialty care and things that are cost much more money and are much more involved.
I can't tell you how frustrating it is for me when I know I need a simple question answered, and I call my physician, and the answer he gives is, you have to come in, you know, or actually it's not even him. I just get the receptionist. You have to make an appointment. By the way, first opening is 3 weeks from now, and I just want to say, I just want to know if this is a concern or not. 9 times out of 10, it's really not a concern, and I end up getting a friend of mine. I know a lot of doc. You know, it's so annoying. But I actually think we should back up, and we're kind of talking about quality as if everybody knows what we're talking about. So what kind of quality measures have you looked at or you want to highlight?
Well, on the blog, we've looked at so many. God, it was a long time ago, but we even did that 2-week series on quality. But there's so many different ways that you can look at the quality of a healthcare system. Some people will pick population metrics, things like life expectancy or infant mortality, and lots of people will point out correctly that those are flawed, because again, everything is flawed. There's lots of reasons that might affect life expectancy or infant mortality. But even if you look at things like maternal mortality or mothers who die in childbirth, we do terribly compared to other G8 nations, shockingly bad. And that's hard to wash away with any kind of we might measure an infant being born differently. Mothers dying in childbirth is pretty easy to measure. If you look at years of preventable years of life lost, we do, again, the worst of the G8 nations. And so on a population metric, we fail. We're the worst, pretty much. But people will say then, well, maybe it should be measured in technology and the availability of us to get access to high levels of technology. And we do much better there. We beat everyone pretty much except maybe Japan, which has more CAT scanners and MRI machines per population by far than any other country in the world. It's quite impressive. And we do a lot of high-tech transplants. We do more than other countries. But those are, you know, things that happen to very few people. And so we do more. And if you need a heart-lung transplant, there's really no place you'd rather be. But you know, the vast majority of us don't need heart-lung transplants. We need calls to our pediatrician. We need, you know, antibiotics. We need a visit to a doctor. And that's where we don't do as well. If you look at infrastructure, we have fewer doctors than most of these other countries. We have fewer surgeons than most of these other countries. We have fewer hospitals and hospital beds than most of these other countries. We don't have a lot of infrastructure. And even if you break it down into things like disease care, where you think we would do well. The problem is when we talk about how good we are, we often cherry pick. We pick certain diseases, and then we pick certain countries to compare ourselves to. And so we may beat a certain country in a certain year in a certain cancer, but when you look at it overall, we don't do very well. We're pretty good at breast cancer. We're pretty good at colon cancer, but for instance, we're terrible at lung cancer. And more people die of lung cancer than almost breast cancer and colon cancer combined. So when you don't cherry pick and you average it out and you look at all cancers, for instance, we do pretty poorly when compared to other countries. We don't do as well, for instance, with asthma care either. We don't do as well with, you know, treating some heart problems and lung problems. And so even our overall mortality is pretty bad when compared to other countries. And so It almost doesn't matter which metric you pick. We just don't do very well. And then when you add in the fact that we're spending 2 to 3 times per person what all these other countries spend, that's a massive fail. Because the idea that we're spending so much more money and not unequivocally the best is just a travesty.
Is it possible some people get confused or it's even a rational argument that if you're really, really sick in a certain way that requires a certain very high technology, very intensive use of services, the U.S. is the absolute best place to be. So you could say, in that case, we're number one. But, you know, broadly speaking, for the diseases and conditions that affect the most people and lead to, you know, the most of the mortality or morbidity, for those things, we're just not keeping up.
Well, I think there's more truth to that statement because, again, if, as I said, if you need a, you know, cutting-edge heart-lung transplant, we do a lot here. And so this is definitely, and that's why you often hear about foreign dignitaries flying over for super high complex procedures. Because, yes, this is where you'd want to be, but the number of people that need those, you know, in a year is incredibly small. If you need even more common, like let's say you have certain kinds of cancer, there are certain kinds of cancer where there's a place in the United States that does it perhaps better than anywhere else in the world. But it's important to remember that it's usually one or two places in the United States. And the vast majority of people in the United States still aren't going to get access to that. So just because the Mayo Clinic is phenomenal at X, the vast, vast, vast majority of people in the United States are not going to be able to go there for that therapy. You're going to get your cancer treatment locally. And for the most part, it's okay because the drugs work the same. The protocols are the same. The doctors really do know what they're doing. You just might not get the newest, most, you know, research-intensive experimental therapy. But you have to remember that that's partially due to things outside of the healthcare system. It has to do with the NIH. It has to do with money for research. And so to sort of say that, well, because the Mayo Clinic does a phenomenal job at treating a certain kind of cancer means that the United States healthcare system is the best in the world, there's a real disconnect there. The healthcare system is something we should think about at a population level, about how well do we do getting people the care that they need, getting them in access, making sure that they're taken care of, making sure that they're covered and that the right things happen at the right time. It's not about the edges. It's about the middle, and it's about the common things that happen every day. And on that, we do terribly.
It's like a basketball team with the best basketball player in the nation, but no decent supporting team. And even though you got the best player, you still can't win the championship. You know, you might have Michael Jordan.
That or even more so, let's say that China forms a basketball league, and they have the single best basketball player in the world.
Right.
But everybody else is terrible.
Yeah, they're not going to win anything.
Like them all of a sudden claiming that they're better than the NBA.
Right. They're not going to win anything. So how much of health quality or population measures of health can you pin on the health system versus things that some people might say are outside the health system? Or is that even a false dichotomy? So, you know, how much is lifestyle and just various choices that you make that don't, you know, intersect with the health system.
Yeah, and that's an excellent point, and we should never, you know, ignore that. But there's two things I would say to that. One, there's, you know, our system is an outlier with respect to how we do things, the amount of private involvement and the lack of government involvement. Because even when people are screaming about government takeover of healthcare, we have almost, you know, significantly less government intervention or control than almost any other nation we compare ourselves to. And so we are a terrible outlier in that respect. And we also happen to be an outlier in terms of quality, and we also happen to be an outlier in terms of cost. And if you believe that it's our fault as a people, that all of these things are true, then we have to be massively different than the rest of the world. Because if you believe that our system is an outlier, should be doing much better, and that we are doing almost the exact opposite, but so much worse, then these personal factors have to be immense. And yet, they're just not there. Our population is younger, and should therefore be cheaper than most other countries. We smoke less often, we drink less, we are more obese, but not much more so than most other countries. Our diabetes rates aren't that much higher than a lot of these countries. If you look at disease prevalence, it really can't account for, and there's been good studies, we posted on this as well, disease prevalence doesn't account for the difference in cost or really in outcomes. And so after a while, all of these different answers seem to go away, and you can also blame some of them on the healthcare system. I mean, you know, if we're not doing a good job of public health, and we're not doing a good job of education, and we're not doing a good job of trying to get people to do things which might make them healthier, then that's a problem as well. And so we keep coming back to the idea that, and a lot of posters in the blog do, a lot of commenters say, you know, it's somehow our fault that we choose to live this unhealthily. And there is some truth to that, absolutely. But it just can't account for the fact that we're spending 2 to 3 times as much per person in these other countries and still seeing such bad outcomes. You would think that if we choose to live a little more unhealthy, that we'd spend more money to try to achieve the same, if not better. But we're spending massively more and not seeing the results at all.
Okay, so I want to get back to something, Aaron, you mentioned earlier in our conversation that I don't actually understand very well. And people talk about when you're measuring or comparing infant mortality across countries that it's not fair that we measure infant mortality differently than other countries do, and that skews things and makes the U.S. look worse. What is that issue? Can you explain that?
Well, people will claim, and it's most often incorrect, that we'll measure live births differently. That, for instance, they'll say country X, if a baby is born at 24 weeks and dies, they will say that doesn't count as a live birth, that's a stillborn because the baby's too premature. But we in the United States would say 24-weeker, we can save that baby. So if we try and the baby dies, well, then we have another infant who died. And so they'll say that is the reason that our infant mortality is higher, is because we try to save premature babies and other countries just let them die and try to take them off the books. The problem with this argument is that you would have to believe that every other country in the G8 is trying to make themselves look better and that we're doing nothing about it. And we refuse to do anything about it because we're giving this data to the OECD, for instance. They don't come in and steal it from us. We give it to them. And we've done this through both conservative and liberal, you know, administrations. It's not as if it's, you know, one side or the other. And if we truly believe we are being unfairly measured, we could change our metric. We could adjust it to match everybody else's, but that's not the case. And so it just doesn't hold up that we're doing things drastically differently and that every other country is trying to game it in a way that we're not.
So suppose you really think there's still an issue, you know, I don't know what story you have to create to make it seem sensible that the U.S. would still provide data like this. But let's just suppose that's the case. Are there other measures related to infant mortality, or, you know, like infant mortality, but only counting infants born after a certain number of weeks of gestation or whatever? Are there other things that you could look at to just clear away this issue?
Well, there have been more individual studies that look at specific countries and look at neonatal intensive care units and things like that. And again, we actually wind up doing surprisingly badly, even given the fact that we invest significantly more money in infrastructure in that kind of technology. But my bigger picture is that I usually pivot directly from that to maternal mortality. Because again, we can quibble about infants and how we measure them and everything, but it's quite clear and cut and dry that a mother who dies in childbirth is easy to measure and difficult to obscure. And when you look at maternal mortality, I think we do pretty much the worst of the G8, and that's mothers dying in childbirth. And so that can't be washed away, but people don't sort of talk about that one as much.
Okay, so that makes sense to me. I definitely believe that there are issues with a lot of these measures. A lot of the things that come up on the blog, people aren't making them up. You know, there's definitely issues with the data, people suggest various things, ways to control for things. My concern about a lot of that stuff is that you're never going to control for everything that's relevant. for a number of reasons, even if you could measure everything relevant, you don't have enough degrees of freedom. You don't have enough data to run a regression with lots of controls. But beyond that, you actually can't even measure everything, all the relevant differences between countries. So what this all adds up to me in my mind is that this is a lot of measures. A lot of data that all point, or many of them point, in the same direction, you could reduce the differences with certain controls, but then you get into the issue of cherry picking the controls.
You also get into the problem. I had a fascinating argument with a student. I think it was a number of years ago now, where I gave a lecture along these lines, and afterwards she was challenging me, and she was making a career themed out of nitpicking every single metric, and I finally stopped and said, fine, I agree all of these are imperfect because nothing is perfect in the world, but they all seem to be pointing in the same direction. But you tell me, what metric would you pick to measure the quality? And when sort of confronted by the fact that she couldn't find one that justified her worldview, she just said, well, there are none. And it's like, well, you can't be a nihilist. I mean, you have to agree at some point that, we are willing to say something is a comparison, even if it's not perfect. But it's so hard to find a fair metric that is over a time series that compares multiple countries, where we come out smelling like a rose. And
that's why I like the. I think you put up in some of your posts. Actually, we're going to have to put up a lot of links associated with this podcast because we're just talking about a lot of old posts. But I think in some of your old posts, you compare changes in these things over time. So when you're looking at changes, basically countries serve as their own control. So is the U.S. getting higher more longevity, over time at a faster rate than other countries or not? You do have a post like that, right?
Well, I think we even had one this week where we looked at sort of mortality. There's somebody did a study and looked at mortality changes in countries from the late 70s to the early 2000s, and everybody pretty much lowered mortality more than we did, even though we started near the top, and of course they spend significantly less, and people still pick it apart. They'll say, well, other things are involved. Of course other things are involved, but it just should be something we should pause and be like, why? After increasing how much money we're spending healthcare, spending so much more than everybody else, spending so much more even compared to ourselves, why are we not making bigger inroads on dropping mortality in the United States than all these other countries are?
Well, that's a good segue to we should get to, if not now, in some other podcast. What can we do about it?
I agree. I think that'd make an excellent one. It's probably one that we should do in the near future. All right, and that's probably a good place to break. People have been listening long enough. We might have even have lost Austin's mother at this point. Regardless, this is the Incidental Economist podcast. Again, it's Aaron Carroll and Austin Fracht. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again next week.